Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to brand new on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I'm an editor at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting across from me, as usual, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
No disassemble.
Ah, nice.
Thank you.
You know, I don't usually play the quote game, but today's episode is one I've quoted from in the past.
Yes.
The box is locked. The lights are on. It's robot fighting time.
Right. And we're doing this because of a little Facebook feedback.
Yippee!
From Corey, who says, please do a podcast about battle bots. And now we will.
All right, then. So, actually, BattleBots is but one form of robot competition.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, there are many different kinds of competition overall. Now, you might be thinking of a FIRST, which is a different type of robot competition in which you build robots that are supposed to solve specific projects. It's an educational... I think of it as an educational robot contest.
Yeah, it's
in
one
which
that,
you are trying to do something constructive with your robot.
Right, Dean Kamen is involved with that one.
Exactly, exactly. And I think, as a matter of fact, I think there is an episode of Stuff from the Science Lab from a long time ago that may have focused on that.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, they did a visit to FIRST, to the robot competition, because they tend to take place in Georgia.
Now, you know, this is one of those things that I like about, you know, Lego. You build these massive things. You can build them in all different kinds of configurations, and robots are similar in that you can do all kinds of things. You can have them lift things, you can have them move and grapple. And then, as with many of my Lego toys, you can also bust them into many, many little pieces.
Right.
And that's what BattleBots is. And
Chris, it's smash.
Yes. The whole concept is sometimes, I would say probably mostly attributed to a guy named Mark Thorpe, who in 1992, he actually was working for Mr. George Lucas,
mm-hmm.
who he was a senior designer for Lucas Toys. And at that point, he came up with the idea of fighting vehicles. You know, basically, he was surprised. I went to his website in researching this, and he said that he was surprised that people seemed sort of indifferent to it. And he said, you know what? Somebody's going to figure out how this is going to work. In fact, that was almost a verbatim direct quote. But he also was thinking about the possibility of creating a radio-controlled vacuum cleaner. Can you imagine that, a robotic vacuum cleaner?
How would that go over? Who could make that work?
The idea would be to make it an enjoyable process,
right?
Mr. Thorpe said. So he started thinking about the idea as he was taking one of his inventions apart and said, wait a minute, what if I put, you know, tools of destruction on this? And we had these robotic remote controlled robots.
And I made
fighting
a vacuum cleaner of death.
Well, yeah, more or less.
Okay.
So, essentially that's how Robot Wars, was created.
Yes.
He came up with the idea of having a robotic competition in which you would build remote controlled devices that would attempt to destroy one another in an arena. And the arena itself would also be trying to destroy the two robots.
Yes, so there would be obstacles in play, and you could either fall prey to them or perhaps manipulate your opponent so that...
It would fall prey.
Yes, it would become a jumble of garbage.
Yes. This started happening around 1994.
Yeah.
And at the time, it launched, it was... We'll say this qualified to the people who would actually want to watch something like this, a smashing success. No,
yes.
No pun intended for once.
Because sometimes it was a flipping success.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, it took off. The idea took off. The problem with Robot Wars, and I don't want to get into this in lots of detail because I don't know all the mechanisms of this. Mr. Thorpe worked with a company in New York, a record company, to help him finance it. The company was named Profile, and Profile Records at that point. And apparently after some time, there were some grappling over the rights to the name
mm-hmm.
and the concept. And by that point, you know, I don't want to skip ahead in a great, but this is not really a history podcast because we're actually going to talk about that. As the thing is, by the point where it really got to be a serious fight, and we're talking like lawyers are getting involved with this, enough people were involved with the idea that it sort of took off, and other people became involved with it, and that's where some of the fans broke off and started their own league. Which is now known as BattleBots.
Yeah, they had become disenchanted with Robot Wars just because of all the legal wrangling, and there was an effort to bring it to England as a television show, which
yep.
eventually did happen and was very successful. There have been some shows in the United States as well with the United States cast that also were followed under the Robot Wars name, but some people during this period of turmoil. They just felt like they felt like they were being overlooked.
Yeah.
They felt like, you know, this is supposed to be just about engineers and robot specialists building machines and having them compete, and it's kind of all getting lost in this legal shuffle. So they sort of formed a splinter group and split off from there, and that was kind of the genesis of BattleBots.
Yep. And of course the people who were in charge of Robot Wars sued the people who were in charge of BattleBots.
Of course.
But as time went on, BattleBots sort of came to be the primary competition in the United States, and Robot Wars had moved overseas to the United Kingdom.
Right.
And, you know, the thing is, this probably would have passed in relative obscurity for people who really like robots. But in the United States, they began televising BattleBots competitions.
On
in the late
oddest channel possible.
Well, you know, there are a lot of things that have come out of Comedy Central that you might not have expected.
Yeah, but, you know, robots fighting each other, and, you know, we should say here, if you have never seen BattleBots, when you hear robots fighting each other, you may be thinking of
you know, mechas.
Yeah, like humanoid type robots, robots that have an anthropomorphic type shape. That's not the case. Some of these robots were quite odd. A lot of them look like boxes with wheels. And in fact, a lot of them, that's essentially what their basic form factor was.
Yes.
But, you know, there was nothing inherently comedic, although, of course, the play-by-play announcers and, the behavior of the crowds could sometimes lend a slight comedic air to the proceedings, but it wasn't, you know, you wouldn't call it a comedy. It was a competition.
No, but it was certainly a lighthearted competition. No one,
sure.
No person was getting hurt, at least not in the arena.
No, feelings might be hurt.
Certainly. Oh, I'm sure there was more than a little bit of that. But yes, for a few brief years here in the United States in the early 2000s, and I guess technically stretching back to maybe 99, but really in the early 2000s, there were a few seasons of BattleBots, which I recorded on my DVR and watched. As far as I know, every episode of, and was very sorry to see that they canceled it. And I was a little concerned that it might disappear. I actually was talking with a friend about the possibility of creating a BattleBot, as it turned out that we didn't get very far with that, because creating a BattleBot, a robot to do this, we're not talking about you know, something like the Lego Mindstorms. Although,
right.
That would be kind of fun, too.
Yeah, I don't know that those would last very long in a battle arena.
Not in this particular kind of arena, because we're talking about things with spikes and buzzsaws and...
Ramps
and flying metal, some of which gets very, very heavy. It takes a lot of pneumatics, heavy-duty motors.
Yeah, hydraulics.
Hydraulics. These tools are very heavy and can do a lot of damage to people, which is why the arena is completely enclosed.
Yes.
We're not talking about just the sides. It's not like you might see at a race where there's a fence to a certain part, but otherwise it's not enclosed. This is in a square box.
Yeah. A cage.
Yeah. So
before they
compete. The thing is though, these are very expensive because not only do you build your bot, you also have to maintain the bot. Say you get in. This is in a tournament format.
Right.
This competition. So you have many rounds of competition. So you get in your first round match, and you are competing against another robot with your robot. Well, let's say you're successful, or you know the person's motor, the remote control never works, or the you know battery burns out. Let's say you do actually work, and you go against one another. Well, the other guy's robot tore part of the skin of your robot off with the buzzsaw that's attached to the robot. Well, now you have a second round match. What are you going to do? Well, you have to refurbish that. Or
yeah.
Let's say the hammer on the top of your robot with the spike that pierces the armor of the other one and carries it into the buzzsaw that's in the arena floor. Well, you know, the thing is it got stuck.
Yeah,
and the motor burned out.
Or
you're
going
to have
to
replace it. Well, this is expensive stuff. You can't just jump in with $500 and
right. I mean, and when you've got things like pneumatics and hydraulics that may potentially be powering part of your robot, you've got lots of tubes that can suffer damage. And
yep.
If there's a leak, then clearly your robot's not going to perform up to what the standard was before, and you need to replace that in the middle. And yeah, it can be very expensive. And it's not like there are a lot of off-the-shelf parts for these robots. Although there are companies that kind of cater to this hobby now.
Yes,
I mean, there are
definitely.
Some places where you can buy stuff that has been specifically geared for use with robots. But especially in the early days, this was a lot of do-it-yourself. You know, taking various pieces from hardware stores and motors and RF controllers and that kind of thing, and making it all work together. You know, it's really a feat of engineering to build one of these things.
Yes, and it doesn't help to have a machine shop at your disposal. So if you can't find the pieces that you need, you can
make them. Yeah, you can make a custom-built robot.
Yes.
Well, they're all custom-built, but you could make one where it has unique parts that you would not find anywhere else.
Okay, yeah. So let's talk about the competition itself.
Sure.
Because, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
So let's say you do have a few thousand sitting around. You want to go ahead and give it a try. First of all, it would help to go to the BattleBots website, to learn more about the competition. Now, on the website, you'll find the rules that you need to adhere to. It's not anything goes. You really have to abide by a certain set of rules.
And we'll get into some of those
specifications.
In a bit.
Yep. So you need to find out what's going on. You need to find out when the competitions are going to be. It would help to become immersed in the community, learn a little bit more about maybe there's a regional competition you could go to try your robot out. And then you need to start thinking about the kind of robot you want to build.
Yeah.
But let's, sticking with the competition. So you go to a competition and there are several rounds. You're given a pit area, sort of like a race car might at a race,
right?
Where you can set up your shop. So you've got all your parts for your robot. You've got your robot itself. This gives you a place to put your tools and your parts and do any necessary maintenance or tuning or, if you've got a switch that goes from maim to kill, this is where you flip that switch.
Right. And you are allowed to have a pit crew, though your pit crew has to be a certain size. There's no size limit on the team that you use to build your robot.
In fact, you can have a team of one if you like.
Yeah, or you could have a team of an entire campus if you really want to, college campus. It could be that big, but your pit crew, of course, cannot be that big.
Now, there are several divisions. There's a high school division and a college division and a pro division, which is, I don't think necessarily you're a professional robot builder, but I think they mean any age group.
Right. And you can even get sponsorships, which helps for that expensive part of the game of playing this game. There are two basic variations on robots recognized in BattleBots.
Okay.
There are non-walking robots, so essentially anything that uses wheels or treadmills, that kind of thing, treads.
Or snakes along the floor. Because I have seen one of those.
Yeah, anything that is not actually lifting a leg and putting it down in order to move, that is considered a non-walking robot, and the weight designations for those. And if you are competing at the high school or college level, your non-walking robot can weigh a maximum of 120 pounds. If you're a professional, that goes up to 220 pounds.
Nice.
So the walking robots, also called stomp bots, those can get a little heavier. So in high school or college competitions, it can be up to 160 pounds. And for a professional, a whopping 300 pounds. So you could have a 300-pound stomp robot if you are competing on a professional BattleBots team.
Nice.
Now,
and a little scary.
The whole goal here, I mean, we've alluded to it quite a bit, but the whole goal here is that you face off against an opponent. Mm-hmm. You know, it's been in both cases, your robot is normally controlled by remote controls. Normally, you would be under, each robot would be under human control.
Yes.
Although there are rules for autonomous robots, which we'll talk about in a second, and they're pretty fun. But the idea here is that you go into a competition, there's a set amount of time for the round, and your goal is to disable the other robot within that time, or to inflict more damage or show better strategy. You know, the round is judged on various criteria, like how much damage did you inflict, how much damage did you receive, and what was how strategic was your attack. If you were running away the whole time, you're not going to be judged very well.
Right.
But if you are able to disable the other robot, or you inflict more damage and play a better game than the other team, then you would go on to the next round.
Right.
That's the general idea.
Right.
Now, we can get down into some more specifics, like what constitutes your robot's weaponry. There were some robots that the weapon was essentially the fact that the robot itself was shaped like a ramp. And
yes.
It was designed to scoot under the opposing robot and flip it over in the hopes that by turning a robot upside down, you have rendered it useless because it wasn't designed to move upside down.
Right.
And then we saw a lot of robots early on that was the basic design. It was just essentially a ramp. It might have a little wheel or a treadmill on the ramp to help propel the robot over it, the opposing robot over it so it can flip it over. And then we saw a lot of robots pop up that could work either right side up or upside down.
Right.
So, that weapon is essentially useless.
Mm-hmm.
But you're supposed to have some sort of weapon, right?
That's right. It's a requirement that you do have at least one active weapon on your bot, and you can participate even if your weapon is disabled. I mean, you could have a giant spike on the front of it, and that counts.
Yeah.
But say you have an arm on your bot, and it doesn't move anymore, but you move on, and you can't get it repaired. Well, as long as you still have the weapon attached to the bot. If I'm reading the rules correctly, it's still allowed to continue to compete. It just may be at a sincere disadvantage the next round.
But sure.
Let's see. I've seen a number of different kinds of bots. There are kinds, as I said before, that might have a saw built into them.
Right.
Which attempt to destroy pieces of the other bot. I've seen bots with a hammer.
Or a hatchet.
Or a hatchet.
Mm-hmm.
As if I'm not mistaken, Grant of Mythbusters...
Oh, he's built several.
Yeah, I remember the one that I saw of his was one of those that had basically a spike that would come down and basically try to impale the other robot. Now you have the wedges.
Yep.
I remember one that didn't have a weapon that would necessarily try to destroy the other bot, but would try to capture it so it could pick it up and take it into the hazards.
Right, and drop it off there and let the board do the rest.
Yes, yes. So and the box hazards included saws that were mounted underneath the floor. So if your robot happened to pass over this, basically the hole in the floor where the saws come up, the box might send the saws up through there and cut your robot.
Yeah, it was very much like an Indiana Jones movie type thing. Like
kind of.
Spikes could fly up out of the floor, or
yep.
Not. When I say fly, I don't mean like they would actually be projectiles. They did stop.
Yeah, there was
spikes would pop up out of the floor, or and the spikes wouldn't necessarily impale, but they would often overturn robots.
Yes, yes, and there was a spike strip on the side. Now, there wasn't anything necessarily that would, it didn't pop out of the side of the floor, but and it wouldn't necessarily impale your robot. Say you just bumped it into there. Well, you might think, if you've never seen the show, you might think, well, that's a big deal, right? Yeah, I can get away from that. Well, not if the other robot manages to wedge one of the spikes into a tread on your robot or a
right.
wheel so that you can't escape. Then you're a sitting duck.
Yeah, yeah. One of the rules of BattleBots is that your robot must be able to move at minimum 2 feet per second in a straight line.
Yeah.
And if your robot is at some point disabled enough where it's unable to move, like let's say it's just stuck moving in circles, then the round may be ended prematurely and, the victory given to the other robot.
Yeah.
Because, you at that point, really, there's no way for you to win unless the other robot suffers a failure, and in which case, that's not kind of a hollow victory.
Yeah, yeah.
There are certain things that are specifically not allowed.
Yes.
Projectiles are not allowed unless they are tethered to the robot.
I would assume this is probably a safety precaution, because while the battle box is...
Enclosed,
and it's likely to protect you from a piece of flying shrapnel that might spin off of a robot during a collision, if you had a machine gun mounted on your battle bot, it probably would be, it could be, depending on what you're using, strong enough to pierce the box and injure the spectators outside.
So this is why I'm never allowed to compete on
BattleBots. There's no fun in that.
Mm. Yeah, so you can have a projectile if it is tethered to the robot, and the tether has to be 8 feet or less in length.
Yeah.
You cannot have anything that goes beyond that. You are allowed to use covering weapons, so weapons that could cover an opponent, but they must the covering must be either rigid or semi-rigid, and the attacking robot must be able to remove the cover at any time. So in other words, you could have like a solid, not a net, but like say like a little cage on a lever,
right,
come
yeah.
down and encapsulate an opponent, and then you drive your opponent into a pit.
Yeah.
You could do that, but you could not shoot a net at a robot and then foul its wheels that way. In fact, you're not allowed to use any weapons that were specifically designed to foul a robot's wheels or treads just by getting tangled in there. So you couldn't drop like string or rope or they talk about you can use balloons and airbags to push a robot, but you can't use them in such a way so that they come off your robot, deflate, and then become a fouling hazard.
Right. At least not intentionally.
Intentionally, anyway. Yeah, if it happens by accident, That's another matter. Electromagnets are, there's a very specific use. You can have them mounted on your robot and use them that way, but they are not supposed to be designed to interfere with the radio frequency signal that's sent by the remote control.
Mm-hmm.
And, you can't have like a cattle prod or, something that's going to essentially create an electromagnetic field that's going to be so powerful that it just, causes a robot to, go down. You can't do anything like that. Like, that also destroys my plan for my EMP robot that I was building. I can't do that anymore. And I was just about to figure out how I could do it without detonating a nuclear warhead. So I was so close. But you can't use flame or weapons that would obscure vision as a tactic. You can use both of those things in what they call effects. But that's sort of like, you guys, if you've ever watched professional wrestling and they announce the wrestler and the wrestler comes down the ramp and there are all these pyro effects that go off and mm-hmm. there's a big video playing in the background and maybe smoke is coming up. That's all for the effect of him taking the stage or her taking the stage before the match. Same sort of thing. That's the idea is that, you have a little flame shooting out the back. Well, that's okay if it's just for the entrance or, a victory lap or something, but you can't use it as a weapon.
Yeah, but there are reasons why you might not want to do that.
Yeah.
Including the fact that you might have a flammable material on board. Now, you can have an internal combustion engine powering your bot.
Yeah, this
instead
is
of an electric
scary.
Motor. But the thing again is, if, for example, the other bot severs your gas line.
Yeah.
Or whatever it is that you're using for fuel, and some spark catches it on fire, you may lose your entire bot.
Actually, both bots might get lost in that because, you're talking about a true flame hazard there. By definition, it has to be a combustible liquid.
I assume that they would stop the fight and someone would go in with a fire extinguisher to put it out, but not, I would assume, before it would do some damage.
Yeah.
Also, it's going to add to the weight. If you add a smoke machine and a, little flamethrower on there for the effects, then that's how many, is that going to add a couple pounds
to it? How much
are
you giving
up? 5 pounds?
Yeah.
Some bots are going to want to stay light and some are going to want to be heavier depending on the kind of attack that you're delivering. So you really have to be very strategic about what you add to your bot.
Right.
Some bots themselves are weapons too. Some of my favorites are what they call spin bots.
Yes.
A couple of them were made from an upside down wok, which doesn't sound very, scary, but if you mount things on the outside of these bots and you're going at a certain number of RPMs, when you come into the, say, really thin titanium coating of another bot, it may rip the outside of that thing right off.
Yeah. These things, like I've seen some where it was essentially like a lawnmower arm that would spin around on the top of it. And usually you have a shell on the outside of the robot that is capable of spinning in one direction or the other. And then the wheels and everything are independent of that. So the spinning motion isn't what propels the robot across the floor. It's just another element to the robot.
Yeah. It's a very interesting type of weapon.
Yeah. It's tricky too, because it's going to throw off the way the robot handles is just from the force that's generated from the spinning attack.
Yeah. The impact usually causes both robots to go off in a different direction.
It looks like when a pinball hits a bumper in a pinball machine. It's just bing, and then it just flies across the floor.
Yeah.
I should also point out at this point when I mentioned that they're independent, each team is allowed two operators. Mm-hmm. You can have two people operating the robot. So you could have one person who's essentially steering the robot.
Yeah, and driver.
A driver and another person would be the one operating the weapons, and usually you would have two separate controllers working on two separate frequencies. That brings me to another weapon that you can't use. You can't use any kind of weapon that would interfere with your opponent's radio frequencies.
Yeah, so no fair jamming the other guy.
Yeah, which is, yet again, all the things that I would plan, here's the brilliance of my plan, is you immediately disable the other robot before it even has a chance to do anything, and then you just go and whump up on it. Actually, you wouldn't even have to do that. You could just move in a straight line. The other robot can't move. It's it's disqualified. It has to be able to show that it can still move in order to be considered viable.
Even if you don't consider that playing dirty, you have to take into account the effect it has on the spectators when the other robot doesn't even move. It's no fun when both robots don't get into it a little bit.
It's fun. I'm looking at winning, dude.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but here's some other stuff that you can do that, or that's kind of cool. You can have a jumping robot.
Okay.
You are, your jumping robot can only, there's a limit on how high robots are allowed to jump within BattleBots. That limit is 6 feet. I was telling Chris earlier, if I saw a robot jump 6 feet in the air straight up, I would immediately turn around and walk out of the building for fear of my life. Cause, I don't know. There's something about a jumping robot that just scares me. There is, you can have a hovercraft as a robot. You could build, your robot could propel itself via the same method as a hovercraft. You are not allowed to have powered flight or jets or rockets, though.
Yeah.
Yet again.
I knew you were going to say that. So,
light and sound. You can't have any device on your robot that is meant to blind your opponent.
Like your human opponent.
Your human opponent. Yeah, you can't have like a fog light attached to your robot that you turn on whenever it's facing your opponents. And you can't use lasers either on the outside. You can use lasers on the inside if they're used to operate your robot in any way. That's fine. You just can't have any exposed lasers that are meant to be an effect or anything like that. And as we said, you can use flames and smoke for just effect purposes. If you are using flames, you can only use propane or butane as the fuel, and it has to be in gas form. It cannot shoot it as liquid or gel, because obviously that would be much more dangerous.
Yeah.
I was mentioning the autonomous robots. You are allowed to build an autonomous robot. Now, an autonomous robot acts on its own, right? Mm-hmm. It has its own ability to perform actions and on a certain level, make decisions and act upon them.
Mm-hmm.
But the rule for autonomous robots is that when the match starts, it has to be under human control. You have to be able to switch it to autonomous mode. So essentially, it's like, you know, autopilot,
right?
You push a button or whatever, and it switches to autonomous mode, and then you have to be able to have the ability to butt in and take it over manually if needed.
Right.
So as long as it follows those rules, you're allowed to have an autonomous robot.
That's actually pretty cool. I don't remember them doing that back when I was watching the show, and unfortunately I haven't seen any of the competition since then. If you happen to be in Miami, Florida, on February 23rd to 27th, that doesn't give you much time based on when this podcast is going to publish. You could see this year's competition at the Coconut Grove Expo Center. So getting back to the actual format. So you've decided to build a robot. You've made all the tough choices. What kind of weapon you want? What do you want to build it out of? You've had your metallurgically gifted friends help you with the choice between titanium and steel.
Right.
Do you really want to use Lexan for the outside? I don't know. You've built your bot. You've got extra parts. You got extra tools. You got your buddies to help you with it. You show up at the tournament, and when you enter, you're in a tournament grid. So you go up for your first bout, and basically it's if you win, you continue. You lose and you stick around and help people out because the only people who can share parts, according to the rules, are people who are already out of the competition. So say you've won, but your motor burned out that you need for your actuator arm,
right,
for your weapon. Well, somebody from a previous round or from another competition can loan you a motor to use in your bot if you don't have one handy. But that person has to have already had their robot eliminated. That's why it's always good to carry extras of these parts because you're going to need them. But basically as you progress up the ladder, you know, eventually they crown a winner. Now this is done in several classes, just like you would see in, human boxing matches. There are weight classes.
Right.
And now that there are you know, the competition's more robust, you have high school, college, and pro levels, and weight classes within those levels. So you don't have a really tiny spin bot going up against a crusher buzzsaw from, you know, the top weight class.
Right.
You have them matched evenly, and they give out awards based on that. You know, prize money, there's usually something, I think, that they try to give people. I don't know that anyone has become rich being a BattleBot owner.
But, you know, it's really an engineering contest more than anything else.
Yeah, I think it's more for fun than anything else.
Right.
And bragging rights.
Unless you're on the show Spaced, in which case it's a matter of honor.
Yes. But I think more than that, though, from what the research I'd done, since, as I said, I hadn't watched the show in many years, I was sort of out of it. It seems like there's been a real community spring up to teach people how to build robots, you know, for hobbyists. There are people who make parts for competitions now that weren't. I mean, people used to take you know, chainsaws and other parts off the shelf or machine things themselves. You don't have to be a complete robotics expert to do this kind of thing. You can really get into it and ease yourself in more than you used to be able to. And I think there's a real community of people where they just hang out and share ideas now.
Yeah.
Where there probably wasn't before. So over the span of just a few years, you know, this is the kind of activity that sprung up. And I think competitions like this and FIRST, the FIRST robotics competition, you know, it encourages people to learn more about it. And younger people are getting involved in it, too.
Yeah.
So congratulations to them. I hope it will make a return to TV. I really miss watching the show.
Yeah,
it was so much fun.
It's a lot of fun.
And again, you know, people are out a lot of money when they lose. But watching the robots take each other apart was just so much fun. So
yeah, and it's great to teach the basics of engineering, robotics, that kind of thing. And you often will see things that show that people are thinking outside the box, so to speak, and that that possibly have applications beyond what what some might see as just kind of a hobby.
Yeah.
So it's,
you can learn a lot about engineering from these.
Yeah,
things.
Definitely. So if any of you guys have any comments about BattleBots, maybe you built one and you would like to tell us about it.
I'd love to hear that.
Definitely. Let us know. You can contact us on Facebook or Twitter. Our handle there is TechStuff, HSW, or you can email us. That email address is TechStuff@HowStuffWorks.com. And Chris and I will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. To learn more about the podcast, click on the podcast icon in the upper right corner of our homepage. The HowStuffWorks iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.